as much as it's rags to riches story, it's scarcity to abundance. Even though I had a ton, super scarce, and I'll tell you why.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Dave, how you doing?
Oh, amazing. Thanks, Mike, for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. I know, you know, it's a new podcast, so it's just awesome to, you know, get great guests. I we were talking before, and I was telling you, you were one of the first people I thought about for this show because you really represent what I think this show is all about. It's doing business in Southern California, and it's doing it the right way with an abundance mentality. So, man, we are totally excited to have you.
You know, I'm really excited. I get asked to do a lot of these, and a lot of times when it's the first one, sometimes it's really young kids or, you know, newbies to the block. And I always tell them, hey, you know what, I'll do it, but, you know, just don't forget me when you're famous. You're the exact opposite. It was an honor and a privilege to be, although this is your first one, this isn't your first rodeo. So I felt I'm creating a legacy by being the first one on here, and it's a guaranteed legacy because you're involved. So thank you.
Are you saying I'm not a young kid?
That's right. I'm not. Thank goodness, right?
That's right. So maybe share a little bit of your story, because I love your story. It's kind of the rags to riches. But the thing I'm even more interested in and that I love hearing is kind of the not such a nice guy to really nice guy transformation. So maybe, you know, tell the folks a little bit about yourself and your story.
Yeah, cool. And I think, you know, nice is interesting because I was really a kind person. I think it's more, as much as it's rags to riches story, it's scarcity to abundance. Even though I had a ton, super scarce. And I'll tell you why, because I grew up in a scarce mentality. I grew up with six kids and a single mom, five boys and a girl. She worked two jobs as a second grade teacher and then packed our dinners into a Country Squire station wagon to fill up turnstiles at convenience stores. And I literally, although I grew up in a scarce environment, it doesn't mean you can't be happy. So super happy kid. My siblings were extraordinary students. My mom, you know, drove us, we always say, as a martial artist of third degree black belt and Jewish guilt, she drove us and woke us up early. Those were the two best parenting tips that I got from my mother. But, you know, I grew up not thinking that happiness could be fully achieved unless you're rich. The only reason I thought that is only time my mom wasn't happy was when, you know, the frustrations, anxieties, fears of not having money to fix stuff or to send us to summer camp or worse, college. It was overwhelming at times. And I'd witnessed my mom crying, which changed my life, because at the age of five, when my dad left and I became, in my mind, the man of the family, I decided that I was going to be rich because that would make me happy all the time, especially if I could buy my mom a house and a car. Now, although that's a pretty abundant attitude, right? I want to buy my mom a house and a car. There's a scarce energy that there wasn't enough. And I see it here in Newport Beach. I know this is about Southern California. I run into guys that have $40 million homes in Newport Coast, and they're as scarce as I was when I was financially successful in my 20s. But I was driven by money. And I believe full-heartedly for almost the first half of my life that money bought happiness. And I proved it because 9 months out of law school, I was a millionaire and I bought my mom a house and a car. I paid off my law loans. Although that first million wasn't what I dreamed about when I was five and told my mom that I was going to be a millionaire, buy a house and a car and retire. You know, it just wasn't affordable. I actually did live in Southern California. I built a home above Monarch Beach late, a few months later. But ironically, I lived in this scarce environment and it grew. I, you know, made more money on the Silicon Valley. I worked for a company that sold for $3.4 billion 3 years out of law school, leveraged that into the Sand Hill Road days of raising hundreds of millions of dollars, leveraged that into be CEO of Samsung's first cell phone.
Those were the days of the wild, wild west.
Wild. People stroking big checks. And, you know, and I, funny thing was, I commuted up to the North Bay, so I still literally, I lived in San Diego at that time, commuting pre 9/11. You know, you could leave 30 minutes before a flight and get to your flight easy, no problem. In fact, I would beat my employees. I worked right on front, right off of San Jose Airport, a mile away, and I would beat my employees. I remember them, I'm driving to the airport, they'd call me, they'd been on the road an hour because of traffic, and I would zoom right over. But I think scarcity is the main lesson that I learned. And the weird thing about me is there was three things that taught me the lesson of scarcity. And if you had time, I'd love to share them.
Absolutely.
The first one was my father. So my father left And when I was a kid, I'm going to break up crying a little bit because I still have so much guilt. But my dad was my hero, and I used to tell my mom, you can imagine, she's working two jobs. Back in the 70s, you didn't have to pay child support. You were supposed to, but there wasn't what there is today. People have to understand this. So there's my mom with six kids sacrificing everything, and there's me in the back seat saying, you're such a loser, Mom. Why can't you be more like Dad? Meanwhile, Dad was wealthy, married a girl closer to my age than his, and like flaunted his wealth, but didn't support us. But I'm sitting there, this is my hero, my dad, until my 10th birthday when he forgot my birthday, which wasn't so bad. It's bad, but what was worse is he told me he didn't forget my birthday, but he just doesn't believe in birthdays. So he now punished me for the next 20 years with that insult that I was so stupid at 10 years old that I believe that he didn't believe in birthdays when he had been giving gifts to everybody, including himself, and continued to do it. It was like a very, very hard thing for me to take. But at 30 years old, my dad gave me a jacket for my birthday. It's the first present in 20 years. And I broke down in tears of happiness that he remembered my birthday, gave me a sport coat that fit perfectly, meant that he asked my wife for my measurements, which meant even more than the jacket. But then when I opened it up, it had no pockets. He ripped all the insides out. And I was perplexed. And this was the first lesson of scarcity, because my dad, when I called him aggravated and asked why he was punishing me, he said, I'm not. I said, well, I can't wear the jacket. He said, I know, it's not for wearing. It's to hang in the closet to remind you you're just like me. And I literally am like, just like you, what, a jerk?
Right.
You know, exactly. And he goes, no. He goes, it's to remind you that you can't take anything when you're gone. I want you looking at it every day, because I don't want you to be the richest man in the cemetery. Wow. Make the same mistakes that I made. Basically, he was saying, don't be a scarce jerk.
Right.
You're a great person.
A bit of an apology, a bit of a
lesson. Yeah. And that was the first. And then the second lesson was, you know, multimillionaire days of many homes and a golf course and a ski mountain, and my best friend telling me, we were playing golf, and my best friend and my wife and I all have known each other since the fourth grade. We all lived houses apart from each other. In fact, at sixth grade camp, my best friend asked for me, my wife, to go steady with me, and she said no. Tell him to ask me himself, and I threw an egg at her, and so she hated me for all that time, right? And meanwhile, we went golfing, and I asked him one simple question: how come you don't hang out with me anymore? I got three beautiful daughters. I have this beautiful wife who you've known since elementary school. How come you don't hang out with me? And he said, because I don't like who you hang out with.
Wow.
And so I told him, well, I'm not like those guys, right? I'm not scarce like those guys. I'm not doing the things that those guys are doing, you know? And he said, you can lie to me, but don't lie to yourself. The third and most crucial catalytic event in my life was 2 years before I lost everything. My wife, as I came home at 5:30 in the morning, doing things I shouldn't do, lying to her, and she literally told me that she wasn't happy. And at 5:30 in the morning told me that we were gonna talk in the morning about what we needed to do. But I literally went to bed thinking this was a joke, and I woke up and realized she wasn't joking, and she told me that I better take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become, or I would have to learn how to be lonely, because she was gonna leave. And you can see, I know we're on audio, but that's my family right there. So you can imagine a guy that looks like me with a family like that, I wasn't about to risk it. And so I changed. That day, I changed my trajectory, and I started taking stock in gratitude and forgiveness and accountability, really abundance. And for years, my wife and mom told me I was scarce and that I was lost, and I would look around and say, what are you talking about? I have a Porsche and a Ferrari. I got a nanny and a huge, like, that's how lost I was.
Right.
And so half of me, my ego, has a need to be offended when people are like, well, you know, we're kind of jerk. I was really a nice guy. I just was scarce. And I think there is a difference. Like, I didn't hurt anyone. I literally was very generous. I donated money, but I donated it out of scarcity. Like, I donated because I wanted my name to be like, oh my God, Dave Meltzer donated this. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So I love that the story. Here's, you know, I know that mentorship is huge for you.
Yes.
And, you know, I know that you really take stock, and you really are all about helping youth and young folks. How do you mentor people who, you know, maybe live in, you know, we're talking about Orange County, Newport Beach, LA, San Diego, there's kind of a scarce environment sometimes.
Very.
How do you mentor people to say, listen, you know, the way to do this is not scarcity, it's abundance. What's your message to those folks?
Well, first of all, what you resist persists. So what we need to do is create an equilibrium of frequency. People can only be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than you. So what I try to do is to mirror frequency first so that I don't have resistance to what I'm doing. There's the ego-based consciousness won't take over, so I don't want to tell people what to do. When I mentor them, the first part is to assess what frequency they're at so that I can communicate, just like a radio, right? If I don't know what station you're tuned into, then it doesn't matter how beautiful the music is that I transmit to you. You're never going to receive it. So I think it's really important when we're mentoring people to understand the frequency or awareness level that they're at. And so I spend a lot of time. In fact, when I have a big coaching business, I always do a free month assessment, right? I usually make people do a gratitude challenge where they have to say thank you for 30 straight days in order to qualify. But after that, for a month, I just want to assess what frequency you're at so I can communicate to you. And you can't make major changes. That's not the way the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious work. So, you know, our conscious, the cellular memory we have is daily. You Yep. forget everything in your cellular memory when you go to bed. Then you got the intermediate, which is your brain, the belief system. And then you have, which most people don't even realize, a hard drive called your DNA that not only most people realize it has four generations of information in it from your great-grandparents, I believe it has 4 billion lifetimes of information. Wow. It's a quantum field. That's what I believe. I don't care if anyone else does. So you can imagine that continuum, how important it is. So I take people where they're at, and then I share my ideas to try to crawl before we walk, before we run, and have extraordinary results because I allow people to learn for themselves what abundance is and to make the choice for themselves.
That's awesome. So your new book's called Game Time Decision Making. It was a great read. I loved reading it. And you kind of alluded to this in the last question, but you talk a lot about lowering the bar, and which is surprising. It's counterintuitive when you're talking right. to somebody about business and all of a sudden they say, well, lower the bar for yourself. So I'd love for you to explain that concept because I think it's fascinating and I think it's great.
Thank you. I learned it through meditation. I think the biggest resistance I had through this transformation was meditation. In fact, when the person who taught me meditation told me about meditation and how I needed to meditate, I went on a complete diatribe about broke, sick, high people sit on their mom's couch that meditate. Like, I make everything happen myself. And she told me at that time, look, just give me 2 minutes a day, because 2 minutes a day is worth more than 2 hours on a weekend. And this was about meditation. And because meditation happened and impacted my life so quickly, and because it seemed like such an easy commitment, 2 minutes a day, and that's how I started in meditation, I started applying it to everything and then started learning how that continuum of doing things every day. Because what happens is what we think, say, and do every day in that short-term memory of the cellular structure goes into a longer midterm memory, which is your subconscious, which creates neural pathways, which then talks to that hard drive that I'm talking about. And if we can get things into the hard drive that change our personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions, we're in the golden round because it creates a message or a frequency of what we want. Working out's the easiest example. If you start Yep. real small and you just literally say, I'm gonna work out two minutes this day, and you build it up, but you do it every day, when your cellular memory, right, it takes about 21 to 30 days. People argue how long it is depending on who you are, what your biochemistry is. But think about it. When we're really on a good workout routine, even if it's light and low, when you wake up, the first thing in your mind is, man, I got to work out. And if you don't work out, your body is telling you, I got to work out. Now, if you go right. to McDonald's and you don't work out and do this for 30 to 45 days, the last thing your body's telling you is go work out. Now, what happens is you look in the mirror and you tell yourself, I got to go work out. But your body is like, no, I'm going to McDonald's.
Right.
And you're craving McDonald's, right? Have you ever noticed how you crave it?
Absolutely.
Just like I'm in a huge workout thing for 2.5 years right now because I put my health before my job and my family for the first time. I wake up every day craving to the gym. We travel and I'm, you know, talking to all these guys that are sitting around us going, dude, does it have a gym in the thing? Is there a 24-hour fitness around? Is there something? It's all the same. And so I believe in consistent, persistent pursuit of what you want, which is the potential of whatever it is.
That's incredible. So talk about the book a little bit. I mean, you've written several I really enjoyed the book. What are some of the things that you want readers to take away from it and come away with?
Well, at a highest level, I want people to know that your experience here is about lessons, right? And we're going to keep on learning lessons and keep on learning them. They're keep on going to be the same lessons until we learn them. And you're going to forget. Because we have this short-term memory, you literally are going to forget every lesson you've ever learned. But we have access and capability of remembering it. And so what I decided to do is take my best life lessons and do a pregame analysis of why I think they're important lessons. Things like being kind, forgiveness, gratitude, lowering the bar, you know, different habits. But most importantly, then after a pregame analysis, I tell all these great sports stories through my experience and research that display or illustrate why these lessons are so crucial in life and to remind people to access them more often. And then I do a post-game analysis, which is my interpretation of helping people to accelerate and grow from those lessons and infectuate them into your life, like lowering the bar. And so I've written this book as a very simple way to learn lessons, valuable lessons that we all learned in kindergarten, and made it very entertaining and attach people emotionally, because I use sports stories of, you know, their favorite and least favorite sports stars, everyone from Tom Brady to Kobe Bryant to, you know, Vince Scully. It doesn't matter. There's, you know, Tillman Fertitta, for example, wrote my forward. Right. He owns the Rockets. Yep. He owns Landry's. Extraordinary sports business person with some great lessons and different perspectives to create an abundant life of more than enough for everyone.
Oh man, I think that's really the lesson. So I have to ask, you know, you do a lot of traveling. You've done business not only all around the country, but all around the world. What's different about Southern California? The name of the podcast is Success in SoCal. So talk about doing business here and what a different animal it is.
Yeah, I think it's Southern California is the best place in the world to do business. And I'll tell you why. Manhattan's the easiest place in the world to do business because there's so much money and so much business.
Well, that's all that's going on there, too.
Right. That's all that's going on there. And the weather sucks most of the time. It really does, right? Where here, we on Southern California, we have the most extraordinary climate in the entire world, right? I'm going to Sydney. I'm speaking in Sydney, literally leaving tomorrow, Fiji and Sydney. And I'll tell, this is the only place in the world that I go that might even compare to where we're at here. But we almost have the wealth that New York City has. Almost.
Almost.
We don't need it. And we definitely don't have all the international business, but we've grown so much. And we have so many different cultures. My favorite thing about Southern California is there's different types of business to do here. Now, we're a little bit more spread out, so if you can afford a helicopter, it's really good.
Right.
I have a driver, which I transformed a car into a mobile office because I can't afford a helicopter, but I can afford a driver in the car so I can, you know, have internet, watch TV, do whatever I want. But, you know, there's parts in Los Angeles that are equal to Manhattan. Right?
Absolutely.
Big financial district. We got a diamond district. We got apparel district. We got districts.
You do.
Right? We got Chinatown, Koreatown, all of that stuff. But then what we have that New York doesn't is a huge entertainment business that far reaches beyond, now that there's so many platforms from Netflix to TV to social to digital. That's all. There's no place on earth, right, like Los Angeles when it comes. But then it's also milked down to Orange County, because Orange County now has an extraordinary gaming business.
Exactly.
Which is overtaking, not gaming is overtaking not only entertainment, but then you got sports. Right? We have sports, and esports and gaming are going to overcome football, baseball, hockey, all of those combined. And it's going to be right here in our backyard. And then, of course, we have the medical side of things, and we have telecom down in San Diego, and all the energies, depending on your personality. I talked about frequency and how I coach people. There is, unlike Manhattan, where I truly believe in the song, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere, because it's hardcore. Not in California. You can have like a laid back surfer attitude and be like an O'Neill person who owned a farm and just, you know, you're the spoiled kid that, you know, fed off of their money. And meanwhile, then you can just build your own empire because you have this like cool Ugg boots, Brian Smith attitude.
Right.
Like,
don't discount the surfer.
Yeah, no way. It's like the Southerners I went to law school with. I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna kill it in this class. That guy from Texas. You know, meanwhile, oh, geez, spun rings around me. Surfers are even worse because on the surface, you're like, there is one lazy high dude. And next thing you know, he's an extraordinary businessman. All of this exists in California. Multicultural things exist, although Orange County gets a bad rap. You know, I think every single one's a Democrat now, and there's all types of colors and races and things. It's not like when, you know, the 70s when it was a bunch of orange farmers.
Exactly.
This is an incredible place to do business, and it has something for everyone. And I can't tell you, I don't think San Francisco, mid-California, let alone the rest of the country, has such a dynamic, multicultural, but multi-business acumen that you tell me what business you're in. Insurance, real estate, and we have the best of the best now, including if you're a Wall Street guy.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely.
Or woman, by the way.
Exactly. Well, Dave, I can't thank you enough. I mean, like I said, just I know it's a risk for you to do the podcast this early.
No risk, knowing you, buddy.
Man, I really appreciate it, and it was great talking to you, and I wish you the best of luck.
Just promise me one thing. I can come back for the 100th episode.
You got it.
I'll do one in 100.
You're booked.
All right, cool.
All right, Dave, thanks.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.